welcome to SlayerFest 98. I'm your host, Ian Carlos Crawford, and joining me for this special episode, I have three really wonderful guests. First up, I have co-host of Dirty Little Horror Pod and my estranged Australian twin.
Hello, I'm Christopher Downs.
Hi, Christopher.
Hi.
It's been a long time. You haven't been on since season 5, I think, right?
Yeah, I lived on a different continent when we last recorded together.
Shit. And next up, we have writer and host of Just to Be Nominated.
Hi, I'm Jorge Molina.
Hi, Jorge.
Hi, Ian.
And last but not least, we have my Canadian husband,
Colin Smith.
Hi, Colin.
Hi.
I'm so glad you're all here. We are going to be talking about one of my... I think I've decided. I have a bold statement. I think it's maybe one of my top 5 favorite movies, Knives Out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Dang.
Yeah, I don't know that there's been a recent movie that I've revisited as much, or I can't think of a movie that wasn't like, you know, a superhero movie or something like fun action-y that like I love, but isn't like a, oh, that's my favorite film. But this, like, I revisit it as much as I like would revisit an Avengers movie. And clearly this is like a completely different type of movie.
Yes and no, but you know.
True. Yeah.
I think it's really difficult when you get to our age, finding a new movie that affects you the way that movies affected you when you were a kid. So I totally understand the confusion and like, is this my top 5 movie?
It's because Chris Evans is in it, isn't it?
Well, yes, also, yes.
It's because Toni Collette is in it. How dare you?
Oh, 100%. Playing Gwyneth Paltrow. It's the best.
So I'll get your initial reactions. Jorge, I'm going to have you go first because I'm going to also call on you after our reactions to tell us about your Knives Out party. What was your reaction when you like were watching it / when you first left the theater first seeing it?
The first time I saw it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is... I am, like, the whodunit is probably my favorite literary genre. Like, okay. It was super influential with me growing up in, like, forming my tastes and, like, what I like to read and write. Like, Agatha Christie is, like, if you could see my bookshelf behind me, is, like, 80% Agatha Christie novels. So I'm love and I'm very passionate about the genre. So when, you know, and it's a genre that doesn't come very often in movies, you know, yeah. It's right now it's having a renaissance partly because of this, but when it was announced a few years ago that it was being made and, you know, it was just like so, so exciting. And we got tickets for opening night, the very, very opening night, me and my friends, because we're crazy like that. And it was just... It was so great to see a film that got the genre in a way that this film does, because it's not just, it doesn't fit, just fit the template of the genre. It's also an homage and speaks about the genre in a way that deconstructs it in a very interesting way. So it was just very nice to get like, oh, this film gets it. And it's the way it felt fresh and the way with like an original story. I was delighted, and every time I revisit it, which I've done like now maybe 8 or 9 times, I find new stuff to like about it. So I find this movie like infinitely rewatchable and very, you know, perfectly constructed. I don't know, I could go on and on, but first impression, loved it. Yay.
Yeah, my notes for this, like I did notes this time when I watched it today. There's so many notes of this is so fucking good, like is how all of my notes are going. Christopher, what was your first reaction to the movie?
So I'm less familiar with the whodunit genre. What attracted me at first was I love any big ensemble piece, Soap Dish, you know, yeah. Jamie Lee Curtis's A Fish Called Wanda, you know, anything with that's just too overly packed with stars or at least beloved actors is what draws me. I was so excited. Yeah. And because I am, because I have sometimes been an actor, I'm also really into watching actors have fun. That's why I love the big ensemble pieces. And so this was just, it was so exciting to, as you say, watch a movie that wasn't a giant action blockbuster, something new, something different with big names and all clearly having an absolute ball doing it. Not that that distracted away from the story and the movie itself, but that's right. I just love watching that.
You know what? I think that's really accurate because it does feel like everyone's just like having fun with their roles. Like they're almost winking at the camera.
Yeah.
Colin, what was your first reaction to the movie?
Loved it. I didn't actually see it in theaters. I Ooh. Me and my roommate, when it came out on Amazon, we were like, oh, well, neither of us have seen it, so we'll watch it. And I had high expectations because of Twitter, mm-hmm. and it met every single one of them. And same thing, just watching them have so much fun with it is...
That's also something that I always worry about is, like, even when I'm the one hyping the thing up, I'm like, oh, am I going to ruin this for someone because I'm hyping this thing up so much? Because, yeah, I think, like, Knives Out, I don't think I saw it right away, but I saw it, like, second weekend, and everyone was, like, you know, tweeting about how amazing it was, and then I was like, oh, yep, this is fucking amazing. Because sometimes, this might happen more with albums, where people are like, oh, this is a cultural reset, and I listen to or watch it, and I'm like, it's fine. But also, like, I'm a fucking grump, so I don't know. But yeah, I loved this movie, like, immediately. I will say, the first time we learn that Marta, quote unquote, is the reason Harlan died, I was like, wait, am I not gonna like this movie? I don't want, like, the one nondescript Hispanic woman, because I also love that they don't ever nail down where she's from. But I was like, oh, I don't like that she's the one that did it, and all these people are terrible, but, like, she actually did it. And then it, like, you know, clearly that was not the case. And I was like, oh, wait, I do fucking love this. I think I might have shed a tear the first time I watched this ending, just because it is such a perfect ending. Like, I want to write an ending that is this perfect, because I love a comeuppance, and this is a fucking comeuppance for, like, a whole shitty family.
It is one of the all-time great final shots of a movie.
Right?
Totally.
Right?
You know, I immediately, well, I didn't, but, like, my friends got me that cup. So
nice.
I every time I drink from it, I'm like, I'm just, like, looking beneath me to these, like, awful people.
But so we'll go into the movie more beat by beat. I mean, just at the top of the movie, I think the score is fucking terrific as
the
well.
The score is, like, the score slaps. Right? I own the vinyl for it, and it's, like, it's perfect writing mood yes. for a score. It's, like, it's so evocative for, like, 70s, like, 80s kind of, like, vibe. Also, like, I mean, I went really into this movie. Like, I made it my personality for a long time. So, sorry if I go off in a while. But, so, like, the Alamo Draft House did a series when it was out, of, like, films that inspired Knives Out. And it was, like, an association, like, Rian Johnson worked directly with them and, like, basically gave him a bunch of movies that he used to get inspired for the movie. And it's a lot of, like, classical Agatha Christie, but stuff like Gosford Park and this incredible movie you've never seen called The Last of Sheila, written by Stephen Sondheim and Anthony Perkins.
Yes, I've never heard of that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. I highly recommend it. But he just captured the tech, like, especially with the score, the textural of, like, these classic whodunits so well. It's just, like, he did his research, and for that I just, like, commend him so much for it.
Actually, have you ever seen Brick, his, like, one of his first movies, or maybe his first movie?
I've never seen Brick, sadly. I know I would love it, but I've never seen
it. You know, weirdly, I will say I really don't like that movie.
Oh, okay, well, maybe I won't.
So I remember when Rian Johnson came on to do Last Jedi, I was like, oh, that guy did Brick. I fucking hate that movie. And then I was like, wait, I love this movie. And then I love Knives Out. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe. The thing about Brick was it felt a little too pretentious for me, because everyone speaks, like, old-timey, even though
it's a high school noir, right? Like,
right, yes.
That's the style, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I don't know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt as, like, a pretentious is just the... I'm like, I get it. But I feel like this movie is fucking fantastic. And, like, even the opening, like, it feels very Clue, which I love that they even joke about later. They're like, this house is a fucking Clue board. You know, they're like, Fran is going through the house and we're, like, stopping to look at the rooms she's passing. We're, like, looking at all the shit and, like, Harlan's books and all that. And I think it, like, does, like, the music and the setting do a lot of work here for the film. At the top of it, right?
And it's very, yeah, and also it's just evocative. Is that the right word? Yeah, let's go with it. it all brings together just the atmosphere, the texture of the entire universe it's building in these first few seconds. I only know that, like, this because my husband is from Massachusetts and he spent the entire time in this for opening scene gasping gaily because it reminded him so much. Like, it's like, it's my home. And so they really have put the use of the camera, the setting, what they've got the music all together to, it's just so Voltron-y. Yeah, that's the thing I made up.
Yeah. Explain that.
Do you all remember the cartoon Voltron?
The sum of the parts is the...
Yeah, there we go. It's that. Smart. It's thank you, Colin, for using an adult expression. Not my Voltronic.
I like Voltronic better.
But yes, the sum of all the components makes such a rich opening to this film.
It really does.
Yeah. And I mean, I hate to use this fucking cliche phrase, but the house really is like another character in the
it
movie.
Is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and just the way it's so like meticulously designed, and it feels so like such a different house, but like such a real house in the same way.
Yeah.
Like I would have given this a production design nomination like easily. And the movie just like right from the opening like sucks you into this.
Yeah, I just love it, and I love that. A thing that I don't even think I realized the first time I saw it until I like watched it when I was like stoned on a couch was that like Fran isn't even that. She's just kind of like, oh shit, he's dead. Like Fran is so not invested in this family.
Yeah.
Like she knows they're all jerks and she's just kind of like, ah, crap, he's dead. And then like is more upset about dropping the shit.
Yeah.
Has to clean that up too. So.
Exactly, yeah. I do have to condemn the drama of Harlan, the way he is laid out in that fainting couch. It's just like, it's a dramatic way to go. It's just, you know, the blood is spilling on that rug. It's, you know, if I ever go, I wish my body is found in like a similar position. You know?
Oh, absolutely. When I enter my twilight years, I'm buying a fainting couch specifically to die on.
To die on. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're like, oh, he's dead. We go right to Marta with her mother and her sister. And I felt like a thing that it does really well is, even though we don't know like where they're from, we know they're Hispanic family. And it felt very true that the mother is like yelling in Spanglish and like, she's like, she just had her friend die and is like yelling about the thing that happened, which is actually probably worse than like her sister just having a show on in the background. And I just was like, oh, I like that they're doing a good job of making this family feel real, but like not making them like obnoxious stereotypes.
Yeah. Also, fun fact, the voice of the detective in that TV show is Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I was trying to figure out where the fuck that was. I read that IMDb that it was like, he is the voice of a blah, blah, blah. And I was like, where is that? Ooh, that makes sense. But I will say that, like, when you've had a friend pass away or, like, someone that, like, families don't usually know how to handle it, and it comes out a lot like that, where it's like, well, now we're making it worse by trying to help. so, like, that I really loved. I love that her sister's like, what? I just want to find out who did it. And then she's like, oh, sorry. And Marta's like, it's fine. Just watch the thing. She gets a call. We kind of go right into the movie. She gets a call from Walt asking her to come into the house. And I love that... the moment she gets there, we see how often these people don't give a shit, right? You know, she gets in and the one detective's like, oh, are you the help? And Catherine Lagenford's Meg is like, excuse me, she's with us. She's not the help. And then immediately, I think is it Jamie Lee Curtis?
It's Jamie Lee Curtis, yeah.
Yeah, she's like, I wanted you at the funeral.
It's so good at showing people pretending to give a shit, but actually giving a shit, you know?
Because it's like the, I wanted you at the funeral, which is what everyone says verbatim. Yep. And then the everyone getting wrong where she's from. Yeah. Yeah. Like everyone was outvoted. And even though everyone wanted her to come, and it's just like, it does such good work and a good job of showing how shitty these people are without, and they're saying it, you know, they're delivering it with a genuine whatever, but we know that they're assholes. So I think that's so good.
Oh yeah. Cause it's not like they, What I like about how specific this family is like, it's not like they actively hate this woman and then pretend to like her. They like, they do believe that, you know, what they are saying to her is like, they do believe that they're being good to her and that like, you know, it's not like they're being two-faced with her. They're just like being so condescending. It's, I don't know. It's such a layer of like performative.
Yes. And when you see how they act with each other, the way they treat Marta is to them their highest form of emotional connection. that is to them their genuine love. Their version of she's part of the family is to treat her like that because how they treat each other.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that because, like, they are cold and shitty. They're not exactly nice to each other. Meg is kind of the only one that's, like, nice, but even she...
But like, even... Well, and it's something so, like, this sentiment of having, and I'm using their words, the help, as yeah. a member of the family, or considering them a part of the family, but knowing that they will never be a part of the family, you know? It's, like, it's this very... I don't know. It's something really like an interesting dynamic that I'm often fascinated with. And I can't believe like it's something that's like Roma does that very well. I mean, if you want to watch a completely different movie, it's like that same sentiment of like, oh, they're members of our family, but like they'll never be part of our family.
Right.
And, you know,
like we say it, but
exactly. No, and I do think they believe it, but it's just like their actions will never like truly reflect it.
Yeah, no, I think especially like, you know, when Linda and Richard are talking about her, I think they believe what they're saying about her, right? When like later on when he's like, oh, well, she's a good kid. Those immigrants, they did it the right way, blah, blah, blah. Like she's a good immigrant, quote unquote. Like yeah. they're like those people that like they believe the bullshit they're saying, but they also don't realize how shitty it is because that's just how they are shitty, right?
Yeah.
So we get everyone's in the house. We kind of quickly cut to the interviews, which are all so fucking good. I read that Rian Johnson said that it was the roughest part of the script and that they had to cut a lot out because there's like so much going on.
I believe that yeah, those scenes probably went on for like 5 or 6 pages each. I mean, I don't know. I think that's a good place to give the characters a lot of texture, but I can also see how when it comes to the editing of it, a lot of it just has to go in order to like move the story along.
Right. Like even if there's like, oh, this was a really good line. It's like, but we need to cut this.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I'm notoriously bad at cutting things. Yeah. So we get, I mean, I go back and forth with Jamie Lee Curtis and Toni Collette. I think maybe of the family give like the two best performances. And they like really shine in this interview interspliced with the flashbacks because Jamie Lee Curtis, her Linda is just pitch perfect, scary white woman.
I mean, she's a person, right? She's a person we've all met. 100%.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For a larger than life, colorful movie character, she's also so very specific and real.
Yeah. Yeah. She's probably the smartest one of the family. Do we all agree?
Yes.
100%. Yes, I'll agree with that. Yeah, I do think they give the best. I mean, we haven't mentioned her pink pantsuit, which needs to be mentioned and emphasized. But I mean, I don't know. I think, and this is not a hit against the movie at all, I think it's actually an asset, is that I do think these people are all more archetypes than there are people, you know? Mm-hmm. Which is part of the genre, and part of the things I love about the genre is how it, you know, plays with archetypes and the fact that these are all like so cardboard cutouts just allow the plot to move in specific ways. But you're right in that the ways like we know what these people are, like I don't think it's contradictory to say we know who these characters are, but they're also archetypes.
It does.
Yeah, because I also feel like I have met a Joni. Like, I feel like I know that white lady who's like means well, but also is also very, very stupid.
Yeah, it's Gwyneth. But yeah, but that, and that's kind of what I mean is that like, oh, we know these characters and the movie, because it's not the movie's point to like subvert your expectations about
right.
The majority of these characters.
It's just like, exactly, oh, who they're supposed to be.
They are like, yeah, what they are is what you get. And like, that's the point of this, you know, it's just like, and that's also when I think why they're having so much fun with it. Cause it's like, oh, I'm just going to take these character with like 4 or 5 traits and just like take them to the max, you know,
like go nuts with it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Linda, I love that we get Linda and Richard are like, the couple we get the most of in the family because Joni's husband died and Walt's wife, I mean, she's barely in the movie.
Justice for Ricky Lindholm, I'm going to say.
Absolutely. I agree.
Which, Jorge, before we recorded, you mentioned, right, that there's like a version where she is interviewed, right?
Yes. And I've read the full like shootings. I don't know if it's the shootings, but a draft of the script. If you go to Rian Johnson's website, he has every script of every movie he's written there. So you can just like download it and read them. And the Knives Out, there are a lot of more of her, and like there's more scenes with Toni Collette, and so you can there's like two or three for each character where they just interact with Benoit more as he like interrogates them more.
Give me a 3-hour cut of this movie.
Exactly, right? Yes.
but I love that Linda and Richard, they're the married couple we spend the most time with, but they are so different because Richard is a complete like buffoon and Linda is an asshole, but she is not stupid at all. I mean, I almost think like she probably wasn't that surprised that her husband was cheating on her, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if she was cheating on him, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. but so we learn during these interviews, you know, the family, I mean, you guys talked about this already, but I love that a lot of it is almost showing how they treat each other and that they'll, you know, this feels very true where they're talking to Lieutenant Elliot and they're like, oh yes, you know, we love our brother. Oh, we love, you know, our sisters. But then we're seeing in the flashbacks that like, they're kind of fucking all are shitty to each other and they don't really get along. Which is like very exemplified in Joni when she's talking. She's like, oh my God, I just love them. Like, it's like a balance. And we cut to her dancing and then she tries to get Jamie Lee Curtis to dance with her and she's just not having it.
Yeah, she's so good in that little segment. I think there was a Twitter account for a while where it was just like Toni Collette dancing too. And it was just that scene with different songs playing every time. It's delightful.
I'm kind of a sucker for those. Like, I mean, I don't follow like a parody account, but I'm a sucker for, I was like, yep, give me them dancing to like every song I know. Yeah, mm-hmm. Great. But so I think one of the best moments, and the reason I talked to Christopher about this is we talked about this on Twitter. I think showing who these characters are, one of the absolute best moments is when we get the, if I could pause, who is that? And we cut to like, they find out who Benoit is. And Joni says, I read a tweet about a New Yorker article about you. And Linda says, I read your profile in the New Yorker.
Like, yeah.
That shit is perfect.
I mean, that's dream script writing. That's dream dialogue.
Right?
We have already met these characters by now. We've learning who they are. But it's such a perfect distillation of who Joni and Linda are in those two lines. Oh, mwah.
Yeah. Also, if you, like, later on, you can see in Chris Evans's house, a New Yorker with the profile. So
really?
Yeah. Oh yeah, you can. Uh-huh.
Oh shit.
So yeah, look out for that. Because it comes back. So
I love that in each telling, the person who's with Harlan when the cake comes out is the person telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
So oh, like, yeah.
I'm the perfect child. Obviously, I had nothing to do with my father's death because we're the closest, and that is my family.
Golly,
that's so true.
I kind of feel like Linda was the only one that Harlan probably liked of his kids, right?
Yes.
And then, yeah, because we see that they had a connection, the two of them, you know, we later see with the letters and whatnot. So yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, because while he's doing everything for his family for, the, as he says, their own good, Linda is the only one he truly shows a kindness to with the letter.
Yeah. And she's not like getting taken down. And also she will be fine without the money because she's the only one that like, I forget what it is, but she like formed her own company, right?
Yeah, yes. She's a realtor.
Oh yeah, yeah, she is a self-made woman with her $1 million loan.
Yeah, exactly. She is a girl boss. She is, you know.
But you know what I mean? Like, she's the only one that like isn't completely mooching off of Harlan.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like, and like you said, he does pay her a kindness by telling her, and she's the only one that the fight was like defending her. The fight he had in reference to her is defending her. There wasn't him being like, nope, sorry, this is for your own good to her. It was her husband who was cheating on her. And I kind of like that, like, she, even though she is, like, she's an asshole, she's the first one that's like, were you having sex? Were you? I think she's just boinking my father. Which is such a good, like, it's such a good, like, weird phrase that, like, I feel like someone that age might use. but so we get these interviews. We meet Benoit Blanc. I think it's at the 12-minute mark he actually, like, talks when they, like, ask who he is. And we get the first moment of where we know that no one knows where Marta is from is Richard, which this is so good. Richard is like, oh, she's from Paraguay, and then fucking quotes Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And the like doofus deputy trooper guy is like, oh, I love that. And like, he's the only one that like is excited about it. Hmm. As I say, there's nothing wrong with liking Hamilton. I'm just kind of a snob about it.
Totally. But the line, I think he says, I saw it at the Public, that like, that just captures such a specific type of rich white guy. Just like saying that, that it's just like, oh, brilliant.
And we later learn that he is like a Trump supporter. Like he's not, he's like pretending to be whatever in this interview, but like later from the like interviews, we learn that he is, which also feels like very true, right?
Yeah, but her family did it the right way is his.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was going to say, I promise you that this family and the family in Get Out are friends. Like they, they have barbecues together, you know, it's.
They're the families that are like, we're different, but we can put our differences aside.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
Oh. But so she also, we get Joni references, Flam? What the fuck is it?
Flam. Flam. That's the spirit of Flam.
Yeah. And I love that he's like the trooper that's just excited to be there is like, oh, that's your skincare line. And she's like, I forgive you for not realizing my reference. And it's so like pretentious and stupid. And I love it. I just love this movie. And so one of the other best moments in those interviews is when, so Benoit Blanc is now like actively questioning them and he's kind of baiting Linda to talk shit on Walt. And she immediately picks up on it and is like, how fucking stupid do you think I am? And then we cut to her husband falling for the bait and talking trash on Walt.
Absolutely brilliant.
Right? Like the cuts are doing a lot of lifting here and they're really working.
Yeah. I also just really enjoyed the moment in isolation of Linda being like, oh, I'm not going to fall for that. It's something that the movie does several times. I think the first time I noticed it actually was the very beginning when Fran sees Harlan's body and almost drops the tray, but doesn't drop the tray. The dropping the tray when you see a dead body is such a huge cliche. You expect it to happen. And then when it doesn't happen, you're like, oh, that's different. And again, when this line of questioning starts up and you go, oh, okay, he's baiting her and she's going to fall for it. When she doesn't, even for a second, again, as an audience member, you're like, oh, this movie might be smarter than me.
Yes, yes. You know what? That's a really good point because they're not, like the tropes are there, but they're not doing them really.
Yeah.
They're like, we're going to show it to you, but we're not going to do it. Like, we're smarter than this trope.
Yeah.
So we learned that almost every family member has had a fight with Harlan the day before.
They all have a motive.
Everyone has a motive. Who did you guys think? Who was on your radar as to who did it? Colin, who did you think?
I think when I first watched it, it was Walt.
That's what I thought too. Yeah. Christopher?
Yeah, it was. I thought Ransom was a little too obvious, and I also thought Walt.
Jorge?
I don't know if I can recall what my first instinct was. I think it makes sense that, yeah, Walt is... I'm trying to retrace my steps. I know I wanted it to be Toni Collette, because that would be great. Yeah, it's... I'll say that, because I honestly cannot remember what my first instinct was.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was Walt. I was like positive it was him.
Yeah, also I'm and sorry, I do not mean to sound pretentious with this, but like I'm very familiar with the genre because I've been like devouring. Like I know when like know that it's too early to like whatever my instincts right. are. Mm-hmm. Like it's probably mm-hmm. not gonna be that. But what I love about this movie is that it kinda like stops. It gives you a guilty party before you have the enough information to kind of make those deductions for yourself, which is so smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think, yeah, you learned that Marta quote unquote did it, I think at the half hour mark, like not even between a quarter of the movie is. So it's also very smart in that like before you have all the information to like make deductions, the movie tells you who it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I was shocked at the first time I watched it, how early they reveal the full story. Well, quote unquote, full story.
Right.
That you think it's her because they're building this case against all the family, and then immediately it's like, oh no, she was actually the one that did this.
Yeah, honestly, like when we got that turn, I remember thinking, I don't think I like this movie because I didn't want it to be her. I didn't like that she did it. But the movie's so smart that it gives you that. But it, like you said, Colin, it's only quote unquote the like what happened. It's not really what happened because she didn't know the full story, which is kind of like the movie was showing us that in those interviews that like no one knew the full story of everything that happened.
Exactly. And the movie stops becoming about who did it, you know? Like, it's different in that way, and that, like, that component is never really placed into it that much. The, like, the guess who game, you know? That, I guess, the who done it of it all. Which is interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and I think because there's a line that Linda says, I'm not sure if it's in the interviews or right after, but she's like, oh, dad was always playing games. You had to learn to play by his rules. I remember being like, oh, maybe he's not dead and it was all fake. But that clearly was not the case at all. And they don't even try to think that's the thing. But I was like galaxy braining it, thinking, I got it. But so they talk to Marta. We learn that she cannot lie without puking. Jorge, is that like a... I'm actually not that big of a mystery buff. Is that like a thing that like some of the characters have like quirks in murder mysteries?
I mean, they people tend to have like little quirks. I don't recall anything as specific or as, and I will say it, plot convenient to such a convenient device to in order. Mm. And I don't think it's used in a bad way. I think that like having that quirk, Ryan was probably like, this will help me moving along and I'm going to like introduce it. And I buy it and I think it's fine, but it's not like it's not as obvious, but like as big a teller usually.
Mm.
Okay,
mm-hmm. I think it's a testament to what the movie has done up until that point, where a detective interviewing someone who can't lie without vomiting in so many other pieces of fiction, you'd be like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
But in this movie, you're like, yeah, all right, okay, I'll buy it. Because it's worked so hard to build the world, get you to fall in love with everything that's going on, and to just go along with the story, that you're willing to suspend disbelief for that overtly ridiculous thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think a lot of it has to do with the way Ana de Armas plays it.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, she is so good in this movie.
You know, she really is. I gotta say, yeah, so they're talking to her, and her acting is, like, really good in this movie, because she embodies the character of Marta, which I feel like I can relate to, because she's kind of just like, yeah, I'm here. And like, she did actually have, like, she was Harlan's best friend. And I really liked when we get the bits of their relationship, that he's like a little sassy with her, but he clearly loves her in like a friend familial way.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And she plays the, like, she's kind of just getting like pushed around by the currents of the house. She's just kind of like, she's doe-eyed, she's anxious. She's just kind of like, I don't know what the fuck to do. And they're kind of like, these are like sharks swimming in this ocean. And she's just kind of getting pushed around. She doesn't have a lot of agency until she does.
Yeah.
Right?
And what I love so much about that character, and that it is kind of rare in the genre, is that she is 100% good. She is pure. Yep. She, mm-hmm. like, her intentions are always nice, and her heart is in the right place. And it's, I mean, I still think it's an archetype of some sort, but it's one that you, especially in a genre that's about betrayal and lying, right, and backstabbing, to have a purely good, well-intentioned character, it's so refreshing. It, just in any movie, I guess, it's absolutely, just to have someone who's, like, purely, like, a heart with no corruption in her. I think it's, and she plays it so well.
And she plays it with humanity as well, beyond, because there's that archetype, as you described, but she's not a cipher. When you see her scenes with Harlan in that final night, there's just so much actual life there. She's so compelling to watch beyond what she's playing it so wonderfully, but that very doe-eyed, very stuttery, very like, oh, I don't just, I, can I will, I'm just going to shrink into the hole, please.
Yeah.
I don't want to be here. The life that she has with Harlan, one of my notes is, I think the best line of the film is, don't make me get the belt, abuelo. I just, so good. And you see like, oh, she's a real person, and she genuinely loves Harlan, and she is as good. You're led to believe this point, and she is through the whole movie, but she is as good as she is portraying.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and kind of that's what Benoit kind of says at the end, you know, is that, like, you didn't kill him because you are a good person. Like, that's, and it, the fact that it boils down to that, it's so great. My entire, my favorite line reading in the movie, it's one of hers, it has nothing to do, I just want to mention it, is when, after she throws up, and she's like, please just let me go get some scope.
Yeah.
my favorite line readings in the movie.
Jorge, I made a note specifically about that line, just the way she says scope and the way she's just trying to leave. She just wants to get the fuck out of there.
That's my favorite line reading in the movie. It's like every time it gets me.
So we get them interviewing her. We then learn that she kind of does know all the family secrets because, again, Harlan loved her and trusted her. So he kind of just was like, you know, we get him showing her that Richard was cheating, that he hired that investigator and had pictures of Richard cheating. She was his confidant. And, you know, she was, I almost feel like better to him than his actual children were, because she didn't think she was getting any money out of it. And she wasn't doing this to get money out of him. But like everyone else, their motives mostly were, how do I get money out of my grandfather or my father?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we get the Lieutenant Elliot keeps saying that it was definitely suicide. He calls all of Blanc's motives wheat sauce. They talk about, I love when they talk about Joni, and the trooper's like, have you seen her Insta? She could never. Like, it's so silly, but like, yeah, we revisit. I love that. All, and like you said, when they all revisit the moment from the night before, someone different is at the cake, but I love seeing the different point of views, and especially when we get Marta's point of view. And we see that, so I read this on IMDb, but we see that Fran is talking about the Danica McKellar Lifetime movie. On IMDb, it said that through Danica, that several characters refer to a fictional Hallmark movie starring Danica McKellar titled Deadly by Surprise. Though McKellar was not asked if her name could be used, she was delighted that it was included. She shared her love for this film on Instagram, and she later sent Ryan Johnson a knife with the words "Deadly by Surprise" engraved on it.
Oh, that's incredible!
I love it.
I didn't even know she was a real person. I thought she was just a made-up woman.
She was the star of the Wonder Years.
Oh well, here's where my growing up not in the U.S. comes off. You know, so
we get, when we see the Marta and Harlan like the scene. This is where her acting, like, even though I put this on as a comfort film, I'll fast forward through the scene because her acting is so good. The, like, panic in her voice, and Harlan's trying to calm her by making jokes. And she understandably is like, no, please stop making jokes. This is so serious. You are going to die.
Yeah.
She nails that panic, right?
Yeah.
I think that's my favorite scene of the movie is the two of them in the attic playing. Yeah. The way the scene kind of escalates from this like playful jokey to like, oh, we gotta like fight for our lives here. It's so good. That shot of when Toni Collette knocks on the door and
yes,
you know, he goes and get her and we just stay on her as she's like panicking. It's incredible.
Yeah, I agree. Marta goes home and she like sits with her mother after having a talk with Benoit. Which I do love, he makes a reference to Gravity's Rainbow, and she's like, oh, no, I know what it is, I haven't read it. And he goes, neither have I, no one has, which I thought was really good, because I had to read it for a class in college once, and boy, did I not read that book. So she goes home, we learn that there is blood on her shoe. She walks the next day.
We need to mention the Dobbed Murder She Wrote episode that is playing.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's a Murder She Wrote. It's dubbed in Latin American Spanish, and her mother's watching it. And I it's just one of the many self-referential. I mean, you mentioned the show at the beginning or the clue thing,
right?
I don't know. I love that detail, and just wanted to make sure. Angela Lansbury is mentioned properly.
I had no idea that that's what that was, but yeah. I love that. I feel like, I forget who it was. Someone on Twitter was like, oh, my casting choices for Knives Out 2 that haven't been announced. And one of them was Angela Lansbury. And I was like, yeah, she really should get like some kind of cameo or some shit. So Chris Evans enters the film and he is so good as Ransom. Like, I love Chris Evans. We know this. I love Chris Evans. He is my forever celebrity crush. He does a really good job with Steve Rogers. He does well with like the pure, really do-gooder, but like he also does such a good job with this like entitled fucking prick.
Yep.
That's what he was playing early on before he was Steve Rogers. A lot of his characters were this kind of smarmy asshole, not openly aggressively rude and bad-mannered like Ransom, but this kind
not
of
murderers,
not
yeah.
murderer, but this kind of smarmy jockey, oh, why don't you just go and get fucked assholes. and he's been Captain America for so long, and also IRL apparently such a lovely, lovely human, that it's so refreshing and such a surprise to see him revert back to this and do it so well. Not just in a, isn't it funny to watch a nice person be mean, but like Ransom is genuinely menacing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I think probably besides Daniel Craig, he's the person that's having the most fun doing
yes.
You know? Yeah, you can just tell he enjoyed the shit out of, like, delivering this, like, asshole lines of dialogue.
Are you kidding? I'm sure he was, like, so happy to be in a good movie that also didn't, like, he wasn't acting opposite, like, green screens. For most
a tennis
of the
ball,
film.
Yeah.
Mr. Evans, this is your wardrobe. A giant, soft, chunky white jumper. Oh, thank God.
Also, I do want to point out that the first thing we see with his character is the dogs attacking him.
Yes.
Yep.
Which, you know, right away, the movie's kind of pointing towards him.
Yeah. I kind of love that, like, they kind of give it to you then, because we knew the dogs were barking. Mm-hmm. The movie opens with the dogs running, and we know that they were barking when it happened, and they're barking here.
They
don't bark at Marta.
Yeah, they don't bark at Marta. Yeah.
Like, I love that. And he just is so good because he's such a prick immediately. Like, he ignores the cops. When Benoit comes up to him, wants to speak to him, he goes, let me guess, CSI KFC, which is such a good line.
There's another piece, another little tidbit from IMDb that says Rian Johnson described that dog scene at the very beginning with Ransom as the best acting in the movie because of how much Chris Evans loves dogs and vice versa. Yes.
Christopher, I'll have you know, that was literally my next note was, but no, that's a lie. My next note was, I want Steve Rogers and Ransom Drysdale to be my husband. And then the next note was about that.
I cut your grass. I won't do it again.
But so we learn that the will reading is happening, which is another very good scene.
Great scene.
Ransom walks in like the cocky asshole he is. The family clearly all hates him. He insults Meg immediately by calling her degree, like an SJW degree. She calls him a trust fund prick. I didn't realize until this viewing when I paused the movie and it said Frank Oz, and I was like, wait.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
That the lawyer who reads the will is fucking Frank Oz.
Miss Piggy, like, herself.
Oh my God. Yeah. Also, Ian, when now even, because that was the next thing I was going to say. So I think everyone I know who's watched this movie did not pick up straight away, or they've seen the credits, or if you watch it on Amazon and you press pause and the names of everyone in that scene is on the bottom of the screen. That's what happened to Will, my husband. He saw it and he was like, wait, where the fuck's Frank Oz? What? Where? What? Where?
Yeah, I realized
none
I was like, wait, I guess.
Muppets.
Yeah, I was like, I guess I've never seen his face on screen. Like, I just know he did Miss Piggy and Yoda. Like, I guess I didn't make the correlation until I paused it today and it said Frank Oz. And I was like, wait, like the Muppets guy? Nah, it can't be that guy, but what is that guy?
He should have done this as Miss Piggy. You know, like with the Miss Piggy, reading the whale as Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure Miss Piggy is cast in Knives Out too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, or just have a Muppets whodunit. Like, you know, that would.
Oh. Rian Johnson can write the next Muppets movie, and it can just be a parody of Knives Out, which I would love.
Yes,
he can. I am also available to write that if anyone, if Hollywood is listening.
I love that after it's revealed that he did get cut out of the will, like he admits that it's happened, he still shows up just to watch the family get cut out of the will.
Yes.
Because he knows that has all happened. So, like, at the point when he gets cut out, everyone there should be like, why are you here then? But he's there solely to watch them fall apart.
And, like, I love it. I love it. I can appreciate someone just showing up to be petty.
Right?
Absolutely.
So he gets into an argument. Walt says that Walt points out, like, oh, you didn't come to the funeral, but you're coming to the will reading. Walt and Richard almost get into a fight, which I love the way it's done, because they do get in each other's faces, but they don't really, they just kind of like slap at each other because they're like two fucking dumb old white dudes. And they're just like, I'm going to talk big, but then nothing really happens. Then Walt calls out that his son overheard the fight more than anyone else did. And I just always think of Benoit's final read of the Nazi child masturbating in the bathroom. All I think of. I was like, when's that line? When I was watching it this time to take notes, we learned that he said, I'm warning you. And then he like stormed out and they end up a fight. Ransom admits that he knows he wasn't going to be in the will. Everyone is like, this will be really good for you. He tells them all to eat shit in like such a good, it's so good the way he's sitting there eating his fucking cookies and is just pointing at them like, you eat shit, you definitely eat shit. And I don't know if you all noticed, but as they're cutting away from that scene, like we're out in the hallway almost, Walt Michael Shannon yells, I will not eat one iota of shit.
It's so good. I wrote that down.
Yeah.
Like that's just like so fucking good because he's just mad and he's like they're just yelling. So we get the will reading and this scene is very good. Everyone's like, oh, what are we gonna get? And we just keep cutting to Ransom just like smiling because he knows that none of them are getting shit and he's just so happy. And I gotta say, like, I mean, all of these actors are just so good. They're all just like waiting with bated breath because that's all they really cared about was the money. He has like that one. Frank Oz has just this one tiny piece of paper that says everything goes to Marta.
Everything goes to Martha Cabrera. Yeah.
And Jamie Lee Curtis tells him to shove the paper up his ass.
Yeah, I love the moment where it's like, everyone leave. This is still our house. And yes! Then, you know, they look at the Lord and it's like, oh, the house is also to Marta. So it's so good. Yeah, shooting that scene must have been like such a fun day on set.
Right?
Because it's one of the few times where everyone is together in the same room, like the entire cast.
Yeah.
So yeah, the energy must have been great. It's perhaps my second favorite scene, and how it leads to Marta escaping and like fleeing. It's so good
because then they're just yelling at her, and this scene is like, okay, so we know I'm emotional. I teared up at this scene only because I thought it was so well done with such chaos, and I felt so bad for Marta because she had no idea, and she's just like, oh fuck, like what do I do? And she's just kind of like walking out of the house and like disassociating and Joni comes up and it's like, I just want to talk. And then everyone's coming up to her.
Yeah.
And when they're,
she says like, DM me.
Yes. Joni's line of, I'm not on Twitter anymore. So DM me on Instagram. So good.
Yeah. I think I also read that Dirty Anchor Baby was an improv line by one of the actor. Which I don't know what baggage he's carrying, but you know. And yeah, and I mean, what I love about this scene, and this made the rounds on Twitter a few months ago, is just how as soon as she steps out of the house, like it becomes handheld. Yes. The camera becomes handheld. So it's just like in frenzy and chaos. And when everyone, you know, started to bombard her, you just like visually feel that like overwhelm. Yeah, great job. Great job, Ryan Johnson. Yeah.
I mean, that made sense, though, because I was wondering, I was like, yeah, you really, like, I always feel like you really feel her panic in that scene. And everyone else, like, I mean, you can, like, we can, like, say that, like, there are funny lines being yelled, but, like, it's her scene. Mm-hmm. And everyone else is just background noise. And that makes sense that it's handheld and that's
where you feel more of her. Yeah, and I think I'm pretty sure it's the only moment where it'd be in the movie when it becomes handheld. And because so far, it's like up to that point, it's just such a like a tight, neat frames. I noticed this time around how many like close ups there are and how like intimate you are with these characters. Mm-hmm. And like this scene just like breaks it all. It's just like fucking Eye of the Hurricane.
And I really appreciate like the choreography that must have gone into that. Because it's handheld, because everyone is still shouting all at once, the movement required of the actors, the cameraman, where the camera has to go in one car, out of one. It's just, it's so tight. It's wonderful.
Yeah, that must have been, I guess you're right, because it's like everyone is there and shouting. Yeah. So they had to be very meticulous about where every single person was standing and speaking. And yeah.
I also love that the kid is like Insta live, like, broadcasting it to
I never noticed that.
Yeah,
I didn't notice that either.
He's like on Insta Live showing it. It's so funny.
Nazi shit.
Yeah.
The I will say a thing that I love so much is that all the social media references, even someone who is like of our age, Christopher.
Yes.
Sometimes when they write social media references into a script, it all feels like that, like, how do you do, fellow kids?
Oh, absolutely.
Steve Buscemi meme. And it doesn't ever feel like that here. It all lands.
It's a movie that's remarkably atemporal, you know, like mm-hmm. even though it has like references to that, like it could be said in like the 70s right. and not a lot would change. Like, it doesn't rely, none of the like clues are about like too much technology or like date specific thing. I think that's very smart to like,
yeah,
I agree.
Actually, one of the things that I read online, it was apparently an article that Rian Johnson was speaking about after the fact, well, the year it came out. Ransom isn't allowed to use an iPhone because Apple doesn't let villains use iPhones.
Oh, right. I read about the rest, did you the rest, yeah. Colin? Mm-hmm.
The rest of the family all have iPhones, but Ransom doesn't touch any Apple products.
So yeah, that's a giveaway. Yeah, if you know that, you know, watching the movie, who did it. That's right.
Yeah, the article he says, like, it's going to ruin movies for people from now on, but this is how you know someone's a villain.
Oh my God. That's so funny. So Ransom shows up to save the day and whisk Marta away. And as he's driving away, he yells at all of his family members, I think this is the best thing that has ever happened to you. Like, so good. Like, it's so shitty, but so good. And like, that's the thing that I love is this movie. The characters are getting in really good lines of like shitting on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And referencing things that, like, you know, that's referencing, oh, what happened 5 minutes ago when they all said it to Ransom. And that man is looking great. Takes off his jacket. He has that, you know, knit sweater. I remember reading like 18 articles about their very, like, very specific kind of sweater that is. And I forget what it's called.
A chunky knit. I don't know.
I think it's like it's something with like about like sailors, like that they were made for sailors.
Okay.
But yeah, so they get away. The family is just kind of throwing ideas out at Frank Oz and Benoit. And I love, and James, Richard yells, Alan, you're useless. And he's like, great, I can go. And so he leaves. Meg learns her school won't be paid for anymore, which I kind of like that here. I kind of like that Meg, who is the only, like, quote unquote, good person in the family, who isn't like yelling about the money and isn't mad at Marta, she still has a point where she will turn, right? Mm-hmm. And we get that point.
Well, yeah, until it becomes about her, she's like, oh.
Right. You know. Yeah, she's like, oh, I'm this, like, progressive. I'm, you know, I'm the one that's cool with Marta. I'm not the racist one. But then the moment she might be in trouble, she turns on Marta. And I feel, like, not to sound like an asshole, but that rings true.
Oh, totally. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yep.
And I kind of like that even Marta still like is like, yeah, but she's the best person in the family. Like at the end when she's like, it's fine, I forgive you. Like, I know you're the only good person. Like, I feel like it's like that from Flavor of Love when New York's like, you're the only bitch I like in this house. Like, it's kind of that. So Marta tells, is it in this scene in the bar that she does? She tells Ransom.
She tells him the whole story.
Yeah. I would also trust Chris Evans at the drop of a hat, so I understand.
Did anyone else, is this just me, or did the movie, did I do exactly what the movie wanted me to do in this scene? Was like, oh, he's not bad. Oh, he's good. Yes. Oh, that's why they cast Chris Evans. He's actually a good guy. No, I'm on board now. He's lovely.
Yes.
Like, I'm a real idiot.
Listen,
100%.
Same.
Like, oh, as good. Soon oh, as good. Okay. He was like, no, you're going to stick it out. We're going to like beat my family and like, you're going to keep the money. I was like, okay, good. He's not the asshole they painted him to be.
But Jorge, you're the expert. Will you suck it in?
I was a little. No, fair. It does. I think the movie does a very good job at like, it gives you this large ensemble and then it narrows it down to like, mm-hmm. three or four people that they keep going back and forth on your expectations about.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of them for sure. Because it goes from like, oh, he's evil. Oh, no, not he's not. Oh, yes, he is. So it's like, it's very much like the movie, like every instinct you had in the movie is correct in this movie, you know, which I like a lot. It takes you on a journey of like second guessing, but no, you were right.
Okay, great. Nice to feel better.
So see, we're not the only dummies, the three of us.
Yay!
So we then get Marta goes home. She's confronted by Walt when leaving her apartment. I did notice that she was like, I'm going to take the back entrance. And I was like, what apartment has two entrances? But whatever. She's confronted by him, and he does the thing, right? Where he's like, no, we just want to help you. We have resources. We can protect you. And for me, this is the turn where I was like, oh, fuck yeah, she has agency. Because she's like, well, then if I have your resources, I have the resources to help myself.
Yep, yep.
And like, fuck yeah, you do. Like that, I would love to think that in this like situation, I would be the one to be able to think of that. I would not. I would have been like, oh yeah, you can have me. Right.
Perfect.
Yeah,
you have all this. Your money back.
Yeah, I'd have been the jump that's like, yeah, take it. Okay, great, 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 great. And I love that she doesn't fall for it. And she is, you know, she gets a little bit of confidence here because she starts realizing what fucking assholes they all are.
Oh, yeah. This is my number one Marta scene in the whole movie for me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm blown away by it. Again, more subverted expectations with her, much like Linda, not taking the bait, immediately pivoting out of it. It's and like you said, the agency, I think I went from, oh, I hope she comes out okay, to fuck yeah, Marta, take them all down in this scene.
Is this so also when
Bill all of them.
When Meg calls her? Is this the same scene?
No, Meg calls her at the diner.
Oh, God. Okay.
She goes back inside and she has the mail. She gets the anonymous note with a toxicology report on it. She goes to Ransom. And this is where I do get a little, even though I just watched the movie, because I didn't take, it is Ransom that sent it to her, right? Or was it Fran?
Fran sent it to Ransom, who then sent it to her.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's torn.
That's why it's torn, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what I was a little like, I was like, wait. But like the movie's so enjoyable to watch that I don't fucking care. Like, I'm like, all right, great. Maybe I missed that point. That's fine. I'll keep moving. So they go to find out. They find out that the place where the toxicology report was done was burnt down. Ransom burnt it down. But Ransom and Marta are like watching. The police see them. They have what Elliot calls the dumbest car chase. And they arrest Ransom because I feel like Benoit's eyes were always on Ransom, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that was kind of the person he was always zeroed in on, is the impression we're supposed to get. Mm-hmm. He arrests him. He gets in the car with Marta. She's like, oh, I have to stop. They stop. She goes to see Fran. Fran dies. We get another moment of like really good, good Marta scene where like she thinks Fran is saying, you did this. You're not going to get away with this. But she's actually, you know, saying Hugh, which we learn later.
Mm-hmm.
Is what the staff calls him, and she is like, oh fuck, she's gonna turn me in. Okay, but I still have to help her. Like, I'm not gonna let her die. Which I almost wish there would have been a way that Marta did save her and like she didn't die, but I mean, it still gives us a very good end. She calls 911. I love the scene of Benoit sitting in the car singing, and he's like, oh, whoop, when he sees the ambulance.
Yep, he's singing Losing My Mind from Follies. So
I didn't know. I was like, oh, I don't know what the song is.
It's Sondheim. Wow.
So they find, so she goes back to the house. Meg hugs her. Marta's like, I gotta tell the whole family what happened. She immediately is like, it's okay, I forgive you. And Meg is like, oh, I'm definitely gonna raid Fran's stash after this. And that's when Marta's like, oh wait, that must be where the toxicology report is. She gives it to Benoit. She goes to talk to the family, and I love that as she's about to confess,
yeah,
and she's like, you've all been nothing but nice to me. Benoit jumps in and is like, you have not been nice to this woman. You have shit on her at every turn. He says he uses the knives out. He says the thing. I point at the screen, Peter Griffin. And then he's like, she'll be keeping the money, and then pulls her out of the room.
Yeah, and he declares the death a suicide.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we only get, we get the whole family. They're all like, but then the Nana is just laughing. Which I like, because I feel like she knows they're all assholes.
Oh, 100% she does.
Yeah.
Oh, the things that woman must know. Yes.
Oh,
right.
The Nana, played by Martha Kent from Lois and Clark.
Oh, really?
I learned that this morning, and I did a little gay gasp.
So we then get to, we're wrapping everything up. Him and Marta and Benoit and the officers are in that room with the knife thrown. Ransom comes in and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to turn you in. They do their dance. Then this is like, so Jorge, as a mystery expert, this, it feels like they almost were like showing us that they were going to do the trope, right? But then they kind of
they do. They do the trope. The trope of like, I mean, in every good, or not necessarily good, but like in most either whodunit novels or movies, the last 15 minutes is just the detective rambling on what actually happened, and like putting it all forward for the audience to understand. In, you know, the, it's always like, we are gonna gather you in the tea room and we will explain it all, and it'll happen. And I mean, they kind of do this here, you know. It's like, it's very much a page from these books. And I mean, that's some of my I know it's like, it's nothing but exposition dump, but that's one of the things I love about this genre. In that part of it, is that like, it's just a good excuse to just like lay out plot and have characters speak it out loud, and your people are just like okay with it, which is not the case for other type of movies.
And it's always an elaborate ballet, right? Because the detective, whoever is doing the speaking, is grandiose, and they know everything and we know nothing. So everything's like,
Yeah, and it's very the aha moment. And yeah, for me, the ultimate one is the original Murder on the Orient Express. Yeah, the final Albert, like, it's, I think it's the final like 20 minutes, just a single scene of just Albert Finney going on about like what happened. And yeah, the script for that is just like 30 pages of him just like monologuing, which is, you know, delightful for me.
So we learn that Ransom had hired Benoit, which I don't know why, but somewhere in my zillion viewings of the movie until today, I was thinking that Harlan had hired Benoit, that like, it was like, oh, upon my murder, this person is hired, but it's Ransom because Ransom wanted Marta to get caught. And again, in the flashback of, we get like, you know, Benoit's like, what were your last words to Harlan? And we get that full scene. Fucking Ransom says, you're Brazilian nurse, are you insane?
Hilarious.
And like, that's the first scene where like, he's true, he feels true like villain, right? Not just like, oh, this like hot cocky asshole. That's like, oh, we're seeing like he's a villain.
Well, and I the way he found out about Benoit again is through the New Yorker profile, because we do see in his house, like when he's writing to him, he has a New Yorker next to him. So like, he learned about him through that, which is great.
Right. Yes.
So good.
Oh, right. Yep.
Yeah.
Like, go back to that as much as possible. Uh-huh. I love it. So we then, the way they like trick him is, he's like, oh, it's attempted murder, blah, 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 because Marta gets a phone call and Marta lies. We know she can't lie. And again, this is her being like, I'm going to do this because he will confess, because she was smart. Mm-hmm. And she knew this pompous asshole would do this, you know, his villain monologue of like, oh, it's just attempted murder and I have a good lawyer, and when I get out of jail, you'll see real hell. And then she, like, Chris Evans is very good. He's like delivering this like villain monologue and like telling them all they're going to fucking get it when he gets out of jail. And then she just throws up on his face.
Yeah, it's the chunkiest vomit.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, ever put on screen. It's very realistic. Good job to the to the props department.
Chris, I feel like you probably watched me have that throw up in the Stonewall bathroom before.
we've all done things like that, chunky things in a Stonewall bathroom.
We've all embarrassed ourselves in the Stonewall bathroom.
Exactly.
Our duty as gay people. You know?
Thank you. Also, I think not to labor on the chunky vomit, but I believe.
Oh, please, let's.
Okay. I believe this chunky vomit is another example of the movie earning stuff from us, because when you do prop vomit, fake vomit, it is so hard to do well, so easy to be too much, not enough, whatever.
Yeah.
And this, you're right, this is disgusting. This is disgusting and visceral and far, far, far too much on screen. And yet we're all like, okay, I'll allow it. This movie's been so good up until this point. I'll let the vomit happen.
Well, the cop cheers when it happened. She's so excited that she lied.
Yep.
Well, also, I want to point out that the reason I feel like it's earned is because we never saw her throw up before.
Yeah, exactly.
She threw up into the vase and like would run off camera.
She threw up into that like McDonald's cup, which is disgusting.
Yes.
Like, what if she forgot
that
was
drove
there?
With it in the car.
Yeah.
That would have stunk up that car.
Exactly. Absolutely. That's.
It's how Ransom got her to tell him the full story. Was he gave her that full meal and was like, you can't lie to me now.
Ugh, I love that, like. Because again, like you said, Chris, it's in a lesser movie, it would have been fucking stupid, yes. Right? Like an American Pie movie, I'm sure has had a throw up scene like that where you're like, fart noise, whatever. But like, it so works here.
Yeah.
And it's like something from a slapstick comedy, like stupid movie, but it completely works.
Oh, I was in a short film when I was in my mid-20s. It was a short zombie film. And the director spent 3 days working out the right consistency of the fake vomit and 0 days working out how to get the audio hooked up so that when they shot the scene, there was no sound. So you can really overprocess fake vomit. And yes, lesser films can screw it up royally.
But yeah, just like, I feel like from that moment on, everything that happens is so good. Because, yeah, like, the one officer is cheering, everyone pauses, and it's like, oh, you, like, because her throwing up weirdly tells you what just happened.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. You don't need her to even say, oh, yeah, Fran died. Like, we know that she lied, and we know that Ransom's fucking done, right? And then he's like, well, if you're in for a penny, and then pulls one of the knives out of the thing.
They do mention, we've been recording you, and they do show that, you know, they recorded his confession. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, kind of...
Well, and it's two police officers and a private investigator and another civilian.
Yes.
So, like, they would all be like, yes, he confessed in front of all of us. But so he pulls out the knife and the slow motion going on. So, Jorge, you mentioned that the kid is doing an Insta Live. The trooper, who's like the doofy one, mm-hmm. is either taking a picture or texting when the slow motion scene happens. So he's looking at his phone and then looks up. And the other officer, Lieutenant Elliot, is the one that like reaches. He's like, no, but so we get this slow motion scene of Chris Evans about to stab Ana de Armas, and it's a fucking prop knife. And it's just, all of it is so silly, but the movie like earned a silly over the top.
Yes. But also in the conversation that Christopher Plummer had with, Marta in the attic, one of the things he does say when talking about Ransom is, you know, how he's gotten like so high of himself and how he's like lost all ground that he is unable to distinguish a real knife from a prop knife. Like, that's a literal line of dialogue he says. And then, you know, Christopher Plummer has like a real knife up, but like when this becomes a prop knife, it's like, oh, he meant it literally like that.
Yeah.
Which is so another example of, in terms of the dialogue and the script for this, such a perfectly placed line, because that line, prop knife, is fairly innocuous. It does stick in your brain. The movie's called Knives Out. Everyone's being interviewed in front of a giant wall of knives. So the motif of knives is to be expected. So when he says blah, 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 prop knife, you're like, meh, and don't really think much of it. It's memorable enough that when the knife at the end, when she's not dead, goes squeak, squeak, you're like, oh, fuck, that's the prop knife. But it's not so memorable that when he's diving through the air in slow motion, you're not still
immediately think, like, oh, those are all props. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, right, that's like the fucking, this movie does all of that so well. Like, calling back to itself, but, like, not ham-fisted where you're like, yeah, fucking duh. Like,
yeah.
So they get Ransom. He's donezo. We get Benoit talking to Marta, and I really like that he says, like, you won not by playing the game Harlan's way, but yours. And then she's just like, this family, I should help them, shouldn't I? And he's like, well, I know what I would do, but I think you'll do something differently. Mm-hmm. And I love that that's the last line of the movie, is like them talking about if she's going to help them. And we don't land one. I mean, one would assume, I feel like she probably would help.
I think she will. I think she would. Yeah.
I think she would definitely help Meg and like maybe kind of help the rest of them, but like
maybe give the publishing company to Walt.
Yeah. Oh yeah. If that was her, I would like, I don't like, you can have the publishing company. I'll just keep like the 60 million that they
give. Like, get off my property immediately.
Yep.
Yeah, yes.
I agree with all of this.
But I will keep this house and you can all get fucked.
Yeah. Like, I'll keep the house and the money. You can keep the businesses. Like, we're all good. Like,
yeah. So we get, she looks at the portrait, which IMDb told me the portrait of Harlan wasn't finished before filming. So all of that is like digital. And so we get her out on the balcony. She picks up that mug that we started the movie with, the My House, My Rules, My Coffee. Rolling Stones, Sweet Virginia plays, which was not a song I was even like remotely familiar with until this movie, but now is a song that I love because it makes me think of this ending. She goes out on the fucking balcony. We see that Richard has a black eye because Linda did learn that he cheated on her by the, what was it, like invisible ink or whatever, I think.
And it was his fault that she learned because he threw the ball out the window.
Oh, shit, right, yeah.
Oh.
God. So he has a black eye. There, she's just smoking cigarettes, and they all just turn and look at Marta, and it's the fucking end of the movie, and it's, ugh. Like, I don't know a better ending, honestly.
Really perfect.
It's a pretty perfect ending.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, perfect. And now for a quick break. Folks, do you love movies? The good ones? Even the bad ones everyone told you not to like? It sounds like Super Yakky is the place for you. The team at Super Yakky loves movies. So much so, they've dedicated every waking moment of their life to bringing you top-quality merchandise to showcase your love for them. From super soft t-shirts celebrating the 20th anniversary of the cinematic masterpiece Josie and the Pussycats, to comfy sweatshirts made for the brave members of the Movies by Yourself Club. They even have pins of some of your favorite directors, like Sofia Coppola and Jordan Peele. Super Yakky joyously brings you tangible love letters to movies and filmmakers that you can wear with pride. Plus, the team at Super Yakky screen prints all their apparel using eco-friendly, 100% water-based inks, and ships with compostable poly mailers for an environmentally friendly alternative to online shopping. And as a special gift to you, listeners can save 10% on their order with the code SUPERSLAYERFEST, all caps, no spaces, at checkout. If the spirit moves you, find them at superyakky.com. Let's watch more movies, y'all. Christopher, what's your favorite scene in the movie?
So I think I mentioned it earlier. My favorite scene in this movie is Walt accosting Marta in the corridor of her apartment. I wanted to go for a colorful scene. My brain said pick a Jamie Lee Curtis scene, but when I get the most excited and the most invested in the way it's shot, the performance, and what it means for the story, it's Marta's sudden, almost instantaneous grip of agency in that moment. Even before, because that's very satisfying to watch, right? Her saying, oh, well, then I have the resources. But also, until that moment, it's so menacing. It's one of the most menacing scenes. His grip on his walking stick, it's very close to violent. I just love it. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, I do remember when I first watched that scene, I was like, oh, is he going to try to like hit her or beat her up or something? Yeah. Like, I was worried. Jorge, what's your favorite scene?
I mentioned it also already. I love Marta and Harlem up in the attic right as they're about, like, she finds out that he's about to die. Oh. Like, everything from that, from when they arrive and start playing Go to when, you know, she has to leave and find and goes back and see that he's dead. Like, I just think the escalation of that, you know, tonally with performances, like, Christopher Plummer and Ana de Armas have incredible chemistry. They're able to play off each other so well. We get to see like the playful side of her, but also like this panic mode. I think it boils down the heart of the movie pretty spectacularly. I also love the Will Reading scene because it's a blast just overall. But as a scene, you know, the scene is structured, I love that attic scene so much.
Colin, what's your favorite scene?
It'd be the same scene up in the attic. And just watching her try to follow all of his rules of how to cover up his own death is just so fun. And where and everything that he tells her, make sure you do not do this, she fucks up.
Which I would do.
But then still doesn't get caught. So, I mean, she doesn't.
It's gonna be lame, but my favorite scene is the end. I just, that shot is truly perfect. I mean, it's just like, I felt like, especially when this movie came out, it was like a really, like, it was like saying, you know, they don't even say Trump's name when they're talking. Mm-hmm. Like when we go into that one scene, it's Toni Collette saying, oh, you don't like him, but you love him. And they're clearly talking about Trump, but they don't need to say it.
Yep.
They don't need to like, say MAGA, they don't need to say Trump, they just like, we know what they're talking about. And I thought, I don't know, there's just something like really great about this Hispanic woman getting the comeuppance on this fucking shitty family that treated her crappily, and now she owns their fucking home and all of their money. I just, feels good, feels great. I love it. Want to see more of it. Jorge, where do you think that they were thinking the family is supposed to be from? Because I kept, when I watched it, this is my go-to. I assume Puerto Rican until they were like, oh, her mom's not here legally or whatever.
I honestly think that, I don't know if Rian Johnson had anything in mind. I think it's left open intentionally. I don't think this is something that, I don't know if it's, I mean, I want to say it's part of the joke that is never revealed, but I also don't know if it matters too much.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, totally. Well, I mean, yeah, I feel like the joke of them never knowing where she's from works better because we don't know it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Like, the only one I would think would maybe get it right would be Jamie Lee Curtis's Linda, but even her, I wouldn't bank on her getting it right. But if we had to pick, like, oh, one person said the right place, then I would say, oh, maybe her then. Mm-hmm. But my go-to one is, oh,
I mean, I think the person who would actually know is Meg, but she doesn't say it at any point, so,
You're right. Yes, Meg would be the one that actually paid attention to that and would be like, oh, yeah, she's from blah, blah, blah. I know because she told me you guys are jerks.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I feel like we're all going to agree here. What grade do we all give the movie? Colin, what grade?
A+.
Jorge?
I go back and forth between A+ and A-. Depends on what viewing, what my mood is in the movie. It's such an enjoyable, it's a movie catered specifically for me. And in that regard, it, excels so well. The thing about it is, the genre as it is, whodunits are not a perfect genre because... Because just the way they're structured, it focuses so much more on plot than it does on character. So I do think that, and this is not the movie, but in the genre itself, there are a lot of underdeveloped characters, you know, just by the nature of the genre.
Right.
But I don't think that is the movie's fault at all. So I don't blame her for that. I also go back and forth. The fact that this movie is such an deconstruction of the genre more than a piece of genre itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like sometimes I love that fact, and sometimes I wish that it would just be straight whodunit instead of a deconstruction of a whodunit.
All right, but grade.
But I go back and forth. Sorry. I told you I was gonna go
you did,
off.
You did.
You brought me here knowing. I will give it an A+ because I needed this movie this morning, so right now I'm in an A+ movie. And the fact that it's so complex is also a great thing on its favor. I'm sorry.
Christopher, did I ask you for a grade yet?
No, not yet. I'm ready.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to give it an A. The only reason I'm not giving it an A+ is because I, as an Australian, will never know for sure if Daniel Craig's accent is legit or not. And not that everything about his performance is delicious. I cannot wait to see him do this role again. And I also love what the accent is. I just don't know what it is or if it's accurate or not. And so I just want to withhold that plus just to see what happens in 2022 with Knives Out 2.
I mean, Chris Evans is kind of ransom. What does he say? When he calls it a foghorn leghorn bullshit, I mean, that is what it is. But I can remember, I put it in my notes. He calls it the Kentucky Fried Foghorn Leghorn accent.
Yeah.
I can remember when I first watched it being finding the accent jarring, but also just thinking, oh, he's doing foghorn leghorn. All right, I get it. That's not really real, but sure. And I'm sure, but every viewing after, the accent has just been yes, that's what he sounds like. Yes, that is what people sound like. But I don't even know. As an American, I don't fucking know.
Also, I don't know if I care. It's just that's where he's, you know.
Because he sells it. Even if it's absurdly cartoony, he really commits and sells it. And I do think that's impressive that he nailed, even if it's a fake accent, he nails down that fake accent and is consistent with it.
It's consistent, yes.
Yeah. So I applaud him for that. I also give the movie an A+. Thank you all for joining me. Thank you all for wanting to talk about one of my favorite movies with me.
Wait, can I ask people something?
Yeah.
If you all could cast one person to be in the sequel, Ooh. Who would you do it?
Shit, that's a question.
Emma Thompson.
Great.
Ooh,
oh, that's
correct
a good one.
Choice.
Thank you.
Okay, I have my two answers are either Helena Bonham Carter.
Yes! I mean...
oh, that would be a good one.
Yes, or Cher. So.
Yes, twice!
Brilliant.
I mean, Cher would work because, like, Rian Johnson would know what to... Like, he would make her this, like, absurd, glamorous woman who just is, like, basically Cher, probably, and that would work.
Yeah. Also, the fact that we've had all these casting announcements, but there hasn't been a woman over 60, which is... a trope of the genre. I'm like, Rian Johnson, you cannot disappoint me. You have to give me an older lady.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, Colin, what would be your answer? I don't know what my answer would be.
This is hard. You know what? I'm gonna stick with my Twitter brand, and it's going to be Michelle Fairley so that Lady Stoneheart can beat me. Wow.
I don't know who that is.
She played Catelyn Stark in Game of Thrones.
Right, because I haven't watched Game of Thrones. I feel like
Sarah Michelle Gellar. What the fuck?
I was gonna say, I feel like everyone would be like, yeah, of course you're gonna say Sarah Michelle Gellar if I say Sarah Michelle Gellar. But like, also, I think Sarah Michelle Gellar could like, because she commits to like her role, so I think she would like
cast both her and Freddy together. You know,
exactly. Have them be this like really shitty married couple that's like. Really mean, really awful, and like she could like be doing her cruel intentions bit.
Because they're going to Greece, so it's a like probably tourists or like, you know, mysterious rich people traveling. So they can play that, you know.
And like Catherine Hahn is already cast in it, exactly. And she might have been my first pick, to be honest.
Fully.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you all for joining us. If you like the podcast, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and other corners of the internet. You can subscribe to our Patreon, which helps keep the podcast going, which gives you access to bonus episodes, monthly Zoom calls, our private Facebook group, and more. If you want to follow us on social, we are at SlayerFestX98 on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you want to follow me, I am at @IanXCarlos. Christopher, where can everyone find you and your podcast?
And you can find me at Chrisopotamia, which is like Mesopotamia, but with a Chris. And you can find the Dirty Little Horror Podcast at Dirty Horror Pod.
And Jorge, where can everyone find you and your podcast?
I am on Twitter and Instagram at @ColorMeJorge. You can also find my scripted podcast, Just to Be Nominated, at JTBN Podcast. It is a whodunit. It is set during award season. It is about an actress that gets killed and that night she won the Oscar. So if you like Knives Out, you probably will enjoy it. So
that
please
sounds
check
lovely.
It out.
That does sound lovely. I didn't realize it was scripted.
Yeah.
Colin, where can everyone find you?
I'm on Twitter at csmith03.
All right, and we'll see you all next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.